tonight is Chof Dalet Kislev. It's a very, very special day in the Jewish calendar. It's actually on this day that the battle was won. The battle was won in Chof Dalet and Chanu Bekafhei. We rested on the 25th. That's how most Rishonim explain. The word Chanukah is Chanu Kafhei, because the battle was won on the 24th, and on the 25th, that's when they rested, and that's when the celebration began, resting from the war, from the victory. Also, according to many, is that on Chaf Dalet, on the 24th, that they found, so on the 24th day, they found the oil, right? It has to be, because they lit on the 25th. They lit, tomorrow night they lit, tomorrow, they found that Pach Shemen. So today, Chaf Dalet is a very, very significant day, Erev Chanukah. Has tremendous meaning for us as we enter into Chanukah. But the question I want to ask is, really the overriding question is, how can we make this Chanukah a very meaningful experience for us? How can we draw from what Chanukah, the tremendous lights that Chanukah offers the Jewish people? How can we tap into that? Because, you know, many of us, our idea of Chanukah, unfortunately, has been somewhat contaminated by the surrounding culture that we find ourselves in. We come from a culture that basically Chanukah is our answer to Christmas. Like, okay, they have Christmas and we have Chanukah. And it's become such a way that we see Chanukah in the same, almost the same light. We don't see it as a spiritual awakening, a spiritual opportunity. We see it as, like, okay, we got our holiday, they have their holiday, we have our holiday, it's basically the same, you got that, we got that, you know. You know, they have their Christmas lights, we have our Chanukah menorah, you know. They have their big tree, we have our Chabad thing, you know, in the center town, which one is bigger, which one, you know, it's like this battle for, you got Adam Sandler's song, you know, what's that whole song? Three parts. It's all a response to saying, like, you know, the Jews also, we're also somebody, right? We're also somebody. We also have, you know, movie stars that we can count like candles. It gets very confusing. So much so that there was a certain fellow. He was in a tough spot. He wasn't earning enough money. Very difficult situation, and Hanukkah was coming up. And he didn't know how he's going to be able to afford the gifts for Hanukkah for his family. So he's on his way home from work, and he's, you know, it's the first night of Hanukkah, and he's like, what am I going to do? How am I going to... He sees a sign, a billboard in front of the church, and says on the church, $500 to anyone who joins the church special. Anyone who joins the church, $500 will you be awarded. He's like, okay, here's my ticket. He goes in, joins the church, and he walks out, $500 in cash. This is awesome. He comes home, so excited, and tells his family, you know, a miracle happened, that just on my way home, I came across $500. You know, I wasn't sure how I'm able to afford, but now I'm so excited to be able to give you Chanukah gelt. So, first, his wife comes over and says, you know, remember that coat we saw last year at Macy's? And I wanted so much, but it was so expensive. Well, now it's on sale, it's a special sale, and it's only $250. It's marked down from $600. So he takes out $550, gives it to his wife. And then his son comes, remember that bicycle I wanted? It's $150. Gives us $150. Then his daughter says, oh, I wanted that phone, $100. $100. He's like, that's it. All the money went. He says, Can you believe this? It never fails. Once a Gentile gets a hold of some money, the Jews always take it away from them. But we have an advantage of Hanukkah. Five reasons why Hanukkah is better than Xmas. Reason number one: never a silent night when you're among Jewish loved ones. Number two is you can use your fireplace. Number three is, of course, the betting Hanukkah gelt on which candle will last the longest. It's always a great game. Number four, the fun waxy buildup on the menorah. And number five is no awkward explanations of the virgin birth on Hanukkah. But this year, we have, of course, doesn't coincide with Christmas this year. We have Thanksgiving this year, which you know it's going to happen. That if those people are going to fly in El Al on tomorrow or the next day on Thursday, Wednesday night flight, Thursday flight, you know that the El Al pilot is going to, you know, as the plane is landing in New York on Thursday morning, he's going to say, "Okay, I want to remind everybody that as we're coming for landing, that please stay in your seats until you hear the seatbelt signs go off or see the seatbelt goes off and you hear that beep." You know, he goes, "So for those of you who are still sitting down, I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and those of you who are standing up in the aisle, a happy Hanukkah." But the point is that we have been, unfortunately, we have the real token, the real essence of what Hanukkah is, has been sort of sucked out of it. Because in light of the other secular or non-Jewish holidays that it comes around with. And we think it's just like Thanksgiving, except there's no football, or it's just like, you know, Christmas, but it's 8 days instead of one. But it's really, really much more than that. How can we experience the real meaning, the real truth of Hanukkah? Question number two is, Hanukkah, we know, can argue this, I think we did it in a different setting, but Hanukkah probably is the most celebrated holiday in the Jewish people. Even the least religious Jews celebrate Hanukkah. And celebrate it the way, you know, Mahadrin and Mahadrin. So, what is it about Hanukkah that, despite the fact that we've sucked the life out of it on some level, but somehow Hanukkah manages to reach the furthest. And how is it that the light of Hanukkah is able, somehow, the power to transcend its own limits and to bring illumination into a realm with which it normally would be excluded from? Question number three. Many of you have learned about the ideal place of where to place the menorah. Okay? The ideal place to put the menorah is in the petach, the entrance to Rishus HaRabim. Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Okay, but generally we paskin that actually it's better to put in an ideal setting where there's a chatzer, put it outside the chatzer in Rishus HaRabim. And to place it lower than 10 tefachim. Place it lower than 10 tefachim, between 3 tefachim and 10 tefachim. Why do we place it lower than 10 tefachim? Especially in light of the fact that the Gemara in Sukkah says that the Shekhinah does not lower itself lower than 10 tefachim. The Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Yomei Aleph. So why Dafka there? Why Dafka do we put it there where the Shekhinah doesn't get to? Whatever that means. But all of a sudden we're putting it here lower than 10 tefachim. especially when you're talking about Pirsumei Nisa, right? Anyone knows that if you go to a supermarket, right, all the different representatives of selling different products, they pay off the supermarkets to where they place their product, right? Mm-hmm. If the product is on eye level, you can have the same product with different companies, right? The companies will pay the supermarket, give us the section that's right on eye level, as opposed to putting it lower down, under 10 tefachim, or higher up. You can't reach it. This is, anyone knows, anyone knows the business that's what they do. And it makes sense, because that's the one you're going to reach for, the one that is most readily available to your eye. And here we go, lower than 10 tefachim. That's not eye level. Unless you're, all right, I won't say it. Anyway, it's not eye level. 10 tefachim, lower than 10 tefachim. Okay? So, why dafka do we put the menorah 10 tefachim? And finally, the last question is, Chazal taught us that one of the decrees that the Greeks, the Syrian Greeks, had against the Jews was that you should write, Kisvu lachem al keren hashor, ein lanu chelek belokei Yisrael. To write on the horn of an ox that we have no portion in the God of Israel. Why was that necessary? Why write on the horn of an ox? Ein lanu chelek belokei Yisrael. We have no portion in the God of Israel. What were they trying to accomplish by doing that? To write it on the... What's the idea of the Karen Shore, the horn of an ox? So let's try to address these questions. The Greeks believed that they could get the Jews to basically assimilate and become part of the larger culture. They wanted to disconnect the Jews from Hashem. And they thought they could do it by reminding them of their great failure. What's the Keren Hashor? What is that supposed to symbolize? It's supposed to remind them of the Chet HaEgel. This is what it's explained based on the Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah, that the shor, we actually bring karban, a shor el chesed. We bring a shor to remind us as a tikkun for the Chet Egel. The shor represents the Egel Azad. And the Greeks wanted to remind us, you guys blew it. Not only then did you blow it, but let's look at yourselves, Jewish people. You have not been faithful to the covenant between you and God. You're not living up to your part of the bargain. Just look at the latest big hot going on in the Jewish communities, Jewish education. All the blogs are talking about the Pew report. Look at the results of the Pew report. Okay, before 1970, in the United States of America, intermarriage was 17%. Before 1970, intermarriage in America was 17%. Since 2005, all the couples that have gotten married since 2005 till today, till 2013, now is at a 58% intermarriage rate. Okay, in 40 years, we've gone from 17% to close to 60%. Look, the entire Jewish community split up into denominations. 35% Reform, 30% no denomination, 18% conservative, 10% Orthodox, 6% other. Another stat. Those people raised in Orthodox homes consider themselves today. What do they consider themselves today? Only 48% are still Orthodox. 15% of those raised in Orthodox homes are conservative, 16% Reform, 13% other denominations, 5% no religion, 6% non-Jewish. That's people raised as Orthodox in Orthodox homes. So you see, the Greeks were saying to us, he said, Let's be honest. You guys aren't keeping your end of the bargain. You haven't been faithful to God. What's the point? Those who've been faithful are the few and the weak. The majority of you are not Orthodox. The majority of you are intermarrying anyways. The majority of you are drawn to the spirit of Hellenism. So they concluded that the Jews would continue to assimilate, eventually destroying themselves. So they said, look, right? Look, you have failed. You have failed. You have abandoned God. He obviously has abandoned you. There's no essential difference between Jew and Gentile. And they thought that their goal of creating a Jewish culture would be compatible with Hellenism. And then it would have little resistance. In fact, again, you look at the Pew Report. You look at the Jews who consider themselves Jewish. And they say, what does it mean being Jewish? So 62% said mainly being Jewish means it's a matter of ancestry or culture. Only 15% said it's a matter of religion. 23% said it's both, which is probably the right answer. It's both ancestry, we're both a nation and a religion. But 62% say it's a culture, Jewish, it's a culture, it's not Messiah, it doesn't obligate us. But you see, the Greeks were wrong. And their error was as a result of their ignorance about the real nature of the connection between the Jewish people and God. The Torah says in Parshas Re'eh, "Bonim atem l'Hashem elokeichem." Jewish people are the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem created us. He loves us like a father loves a child. And that love is unconditional. When a child comes home with a great report card to his father does not love him anymore. I think this is a point we've made before. His father does not love him any more than he loved him before he came with that report card. And when he comes in with a bad report card, the father does not love him any less. He may be more proud of him or less proud of him. He may be disappointed or happy, but his love is independent of how he does. At least that's the way it's supposed to be. If it's not that way, then there's something wrong with that father. But a father and a mother love a child unconditionally. A mother certainly so. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu's love for the Jewish people as Banim Atem Hashem Elokeichem is unconditional, and it doesn't depend on how we're doing or how well we have committed ourselves and done what Kadosh Baruch Hu has asked of us. That bond is an integral part of our identity, and it'll always be a part of us. A Jew is connected to God just because he is a chelek b'Elokei Yisrael. There's a portion of God inside every single one of us. Our neshama tahorahi is chelek Eloka mimal. We are a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in every single Jew. It comes to us as an inheritance, not anything that we earned or can lose. It's from starting from Avraham Avinu, something we've gotten from our avos is this deep connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even if a person sins, that portion endures and always provide him with a way to return to Hashem. Many of you learned the Gemara on Shabbos, Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that psilos u'shmanim she'ein madlikin behen b'Shabbos, madlikin behen the Chanukah. Those wicks and oils that you can't use for to light on Shabbos because they're very coarse type of oils, or the wicks don't carry a flame well, they don't connect well to the oil, and therefore the flame is always flickering. It's not a steady, strong flame. You can't use them on Shabbos, but on Chanukah you can use them. So many of the tzaddikim have explained the Mo'rainayim. It's the Rebbe of Chernobyl, the Sfas Emes, the Beis Avram of Slonim, Sfas Emes from Ger, all say the same idea on this Gemara. Very, very beautiful idea. Says that the Ner, the Neshamos, the Shemen and the Ner, the Psilos, the oils and the wicks, it's talking about Jewish souls. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam. Ner, the word Nefesh, the soul, is an acronym of Nun, Hey, Shin, Ner, Psilos, Shemen. Ner is the vessel that holds the Shemen, and Psilos are the wicks. So there are Jews whose souls are filled with light of Shabbos. For them, it's truly Noam HaNeshamos, Oneg HaRuchos, Eden HaNefashos, like we sing in Ka'ech Sof, Mamish, when they, on Shabbos, they feel the beauty of Shabbos, the light of Shabbos. There are certain Jewish souls that really feel an awesome connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Shabbos. When Shabbos arrives, they feel a sublime light. They're surrounded by an aura of Kedusha. So these neshamas are like those lamps of good quality oil, good wicks. The lamps that are lit on Shabbos, a flame of holiness hovers over them, and they're filled with godly light. These, as the Sfas Emes we said, explains, these are the oils and wicks that can be lit on Shabbos. Ideally, that should be the experience of every Jew. Halavai, that was the case for every one of us. But unfortunately, there are many observant Jews who are very meticulous in doing mitzvos. They keep Shabbos. They don't keep half Shabbos, they keep full Shabbos, and they're doing everything as they're supposed to be doing. But when you ask them, like, you know, how was Shabbos? Whatever. You know, Shabbos. Even during Shalosh Shudis, which is the holiest time, it's a time when the entire world yearns for Hashem on Shalosh Shudis. The Rabbin, the holiest time of the week, these Jews are searching the sky, looking for the three stars. And when can I get back to my phone? When can I turn on the TV? When can I call my friend? Update my Facebook stats. They just don't feel it. They don't feel Shabbos. They don't feel anything special. It's just a drag. These neshamas are like the lamps that Shabbos is unable to light. They are the oils and wicks that can't be kindled on Shabbos. But on Hanukkah, even those neshamas can be lit. On Hanukkah, we can experience the holiness and illumination that we may not be zochet to on Shabbos. You know, Shabbos is the number that corresponds to Shabbos is 7. Everything about Shabbos is the 7th day of the week. But Hanukkah, the number that symbolizes Hanukkah is the number 8. 8 days of Hanukkah, 8 candles. It's the Maral explains that 8 is the number beyond. 7 is the days of the week. It's the teva. It's within the nature. But 8 is like beyond nature. And the Hanukkah has that ability to go beyond the normal rules of nature. On Shabbos, a person has to raise himself to lofty heights in order to experience Shabbos properly. But on Hanukkah, the holiness comes down to us. Hashem, kivayachal, lowers himself to each individual. He brings His holy fire down to kindle even the coarsest wicks, to illuminate even the lowest neshamos. On Chanukah, the Shechina descends even lower than 10 tefachim, into Rishus HaRabim, which is normally associated with a place of unholiness. And on the left side, Mezuzah Miyamin, Chanukah Mismol, the Ner Chanukah Mismol, the left side is normally associated again with less than ideal, the side of Tumah. And even during the time of darkness, right, we light at night. And when during the darkest time of the year, normally Chanukah corresponds with the winter equinox, the darkest, and many have pointed out that Chaf Hei Kislev, when it happened the first time, that was actually the shortest day of the year, the longest night of the year. So in the darkest time, Dafka there, Kodesh Baruch Hu is able to descend to us. We see the light of Chanukah can transcend the usual boundaries of holiness. It can penetrate into the realms of chol, of weekday, of mundane unholiness. All we need to do is open ourselves up. We need to create kelim to receive that light. We have a tremendous opportunity. The time of Chanukah is usually the time of year. Every year when guys come to yeshiva, they can tap into something very, very special. And they said, a lot of us, we don't feel it on Shabbos necessarily. Or some of us haven't even felt it. Many of you have. Many of us have. We've already, you know, we've bought into what yeshiva is about. But even those who haven't yet, Chanukah is a time that you can connect to this holiness. We all came here for it. Everyone who came to yeshiva this year, and specifically to this yeshiva, came because he wants to tap into something. Something beyond, something holy. He wants to feel it. He wants to give it a chance. And Chanukah is that opportunity. Try to forget all your Chanukah experiences till now. And try to say, I'm going to experience Chanukah for the first time that I've ever experienced it. When you light those candles the first time, say a little tefillah. Talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Talk to Hashem. Say HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm lighting after you make your brachos and say Aner Salah. And you stand there by your candles and you say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to feel the warmth of your light. I want the light to penetrate into my neshama. I want to connect to you. I want to draw closer to you. I want the stuff that I don't really understand what he's saying, but whatever Rabbi Yosher was talking about, I want it. I want it in my own life. I want it. I want to connect to it. The koach of tefillah and Chanukah is an amazing koach. You have to open yourself up. You have to create a kli. You have to create an air. An air is what is the... Not to be confused the way we use Nair today. The Nair is the vessel, is that piece of pottery in which you put the shemen and the wick and the flame. So you have to create a kli. Open yourself up. And that light will come in. You can illuminate yourself this time. It's a tremendous opportunity. All the signs that in the world can't stress enough the opportunity that this yeshiva presents you with, Chanukah. Now it's true, you have vacation, which some would say goes against the idea of Chanukah. Chanukah, they rested on the 25th because they won the battle, now they can rest, now they can get back to the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? We rest so then we can serve God properly. Until then we cannot serve God. And yet here in Hanukkah we give vacation. But the idea is not necessarily to, you know, throw off the yoke of Shamayim, the yoke of heaven, and to sort of take us off the track that maybe many of us at Baruch Hashem are on the path to really accomplishing great things this year. The idea is to take a chance, an opportunity to just recharge our batteries. Been learning very beautifully since Sukkot break, 2 months. Now it's time to take a little break. But the idea is to break in order to rekindle the fire when I get back. Come Monday morning, I'm back into it. Now there's an opportunity here that the yeshiva has created really with the brainchild of Rabbi Roblowski of 30 hours over the course of Hanukkah. Learning Gemara, get a free meal in Papagayos. Okay, the meal is not really the important part. The part is that you're tapping in to, again, you're basically what you're expressing with those 30 hours. Again, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to do it for Papagayos. You don't want to learn Gemara, so do something else. Like Rabbi Schneider said this morning, so find something else that I'm gonna take upon myself over Hanukkah, because I want to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because I understand that this is an unbelievable opportunity that Hanukkah presents itself. To even wherever I'm at, I can tap into that holiness that descends to me, and it can really illuminate the rest of your year. Many of the Shana Bet guys, and you've heard it already. So I apologize if it sounds repetitive. But many Shana Bet guys, this was a turning point for them in the year. To take upon themselves, you know, and they never would have thought, 30 hours of Gemara when it's during my break time. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. And they pushed themselves, and it was a turning point. From then, it was just like, it was smooth sailing after that. Obviously, the miracle that happened on Hanukkah, which is represented by the nace of the Pach HaShemen, that one flask of oil that was uncontaminated, untouched. You all realize it already. It's obvious that represents the neshama of a Jew that you can't contaminate. You can contaminate everything about a person. A person can mess up in so many different ways, but there's one Pach Shemen that will always remain whole. There's one part of ourselves that can never be contaminated. As many times as we've messed up with a Cheira Egel and with a Cheira Meraglim and other times when we ran after this Yetzara and that Yetzara. But that's what's reflected in the Pach HaShemen. That's why that becomes the symbol of the miracle of Hanukkah. We light lower than 10 to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reaches Dafkan Hanukkah, as opposed to the rest of the year. He reaches down to the lowest person, to the lowest places. And we say we are a chelik of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Greeks got it wrong. They thought ein lanu chelik. That's the whole point. Is that even despite a cheira egel, we still are a chelik Elokim imal. We still have that portion of God that can never be put out. And that light of Hanukkah has the ability to transcend all the normal boundaries that may exist during the week, on Shabbos, any other time of the year. This is the great miracle. Even greater than the miracle that people thought they witnessed, Rose was a wonderful woman who always was involved in all sorts of different types of charity. any opportunity to help her fellow Jew, she would. And all these different charities, she actually had bumper stickers on her car. That she, you know, all the different things that she was involved in, all over her car. And she was on her way to visit one of the old age homes that she would go and visit and try to cheer up some of the elderly members of our community. And on the way there, she actually breaks down. Turns out she runs out of gas. She ran out of gas. So there's a gas station, petrol station. Not that far away, she goes to the petrol station, and the attendant there, she goes, you know, is it okay, can you please, I ran out of gas about a mile back, can you please lend me the gas can? So, you know, I'll bring it right back, I'll just fill up, I'll bring it right back. And the guy says, I'm sorry, man, but just a couple of minutes ago, somebody was here, and just borrowed, same thing happened, he borrowed the gas can, so I don't have anything to lend you if you, you know, just maybe you want to wait those 20 minutes or so, probably come back and I'll lend it to you. He says, no, I'm late as it is, I have to go. She's trying to think, what can she use? She goes back to the car, she remembers that she has, in the back of her car, she has a bedpan that she uses that, you know, sometimes she visits these people, sometimes they're incompetent, they're in their home, and she has a spare bedpan in her car. So she takes the bedpan, she goes back to the gas station, she fills the bedpan, takes it back to the car, and she's trying to fill her car with the gas in the bedpan. These two guys walking by sees this scene, this woman, and one guy says to his friend, if that woman's able to start her car, I'm converting to Judaism. Think about that. Okay. Anyways, that's the great miracle. Everyone gets it? All right. Okay, yeah, I'll explain it to you. Okay, got it. Okay. Anyways, the miracle of Hanukkah. Miracle of Hanukkah is the fact that we can't. We can never, that Jew can never, will always be there. The neshama, the chelek elokim imah will always be there. Despite all the reports, the negative pure reports, we will never, that flame that's within every Jew will never be put out. And we can just tap into to that. Tap into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reaching out to us. Tap in to recognize the neshama Torah that's within us and illuminate ourselves. That a great fire will burst forth from within ourselves and carry us through the rest of the year, Mitzvah Shem. Have a good evening.